Yo, Z-Pack, this episode is made possible by the generous sponsorship of Athena Health. Athena Health partners with hospital and ambulatory clients to drive results. They offer network-enabled medical record, revenue cycle management, patient engagement, care coordination, and population health services to build Health 3.0. Yo, get back to the work you love doing. Athena Health, free up. Let's have some fun. This beat is sick. I want to take a ride on your disco stick. So that's what my kid was singing today in the house at 6 years old. And it got real for a minute there. And then I was like, well, how did you learn that? Where did you learn that? And she looked up at me and said, I learned it from watching you, Dad. And apparently I was running around in my underwear singing Lady Gaga, which brings us to today's show.
Yeah.
I don't know how, but it does.
Today's show is just going to be us talking lots of trash about things.
Lots of things that actually matter, especially in light of all the events that have happened in Las Vegas and everybody who's working so hard to help and save lives currently. We thought today would be a good day to do a tribe talk where we blow off some steam, where we talk hella shit. There's going to be cursing. If you've got kids, put your fingers in their ears and do not let them sing Lady Gaga's whatever that song was. Is it Just Dance? No. Is it
poker,
Bad Romance?
Poker Face?
No. Yeah. I want to take a ride on your disco stick. What did that come from?
Dun, dun,
oh,
love game.
Play a love game, play love a love game. Is it love fame? Do you love fame? Is it love game and game? Whatever, however the hell it goes. Just don't do it, people. So we want to talk about one of the things that we've been noticing, and this has been happening more obviously in light of recent events, and that is many people are sending me GoFundMe pages for the victims of the shooting in Las Vegas and asking me to share them on my page. And just to preface, I have a policy of generally no GoFundMe pages on the Z-Dog page because I would be drowning in them because there are so many worthy GoFundMe pages. And if I share one, then I kind of have to share them all to be fair. Otherwise, I'm choosing favorites. And so I typically don't do that. But it got me thinking and it got Tom thinking, what has happened in our country where you can be the victim of a horrible act of violence, right, by a nasty, evil, horrible human being who is now dead, and you end up potentially going bankrupt because your entire life has changed. If you don't have health insurance or you have poor health insurance or now you can't work or now your family has to come and be with you in a strange city and all these expenses add up and you're living on the edge to begin with, now you're pushed over to the edge into bankruptcy. And as we already know, the United States is probably one of the only countries in the developed world where you can, where the number one cause of bankruptcy, personal bankruptcy, is medical. So you add that now with an act of evil perpetrated on you, of which you had nothing to do with this. You went to go see Jason Aldean at a country concert, and suddenly your life is totally changed. What do you turn to? And in the old days, you know, family, friends, you hope for the best, or you struggle through. Now it's GoFundMe. So everybody can open a GoFundMe page and can spread it on social media and can ask celebrities and internet sensations and other people to share their GoFundMe page. And every single one of them is generally, at least in this context, very worthwhile. But how do we get to this point, Tom, where GoFundMe is the best health insurance in America?
Well, I think it's basically because, right, that, you know, Obamacare, the penalty for going without Obamacare is something like $800, right? And if you're not planning to pay taxes anyway, you're like,
yeah,
$800 to who?
So
I'm below the system, son.
So, yeah. I mean, after Obamacare, a lot more people got covered, but there's still tons of people who fall through the cracks, and either they didn't fit the Medicaid expansion, or the premiums have risen so much that they can't pay, and they'd rather pay the tax penalty, which doesn't have a lot of teeth. And those penalties, you know, aren't strong enough to actually encourage healthy young people to get insurance. And it's healthy young people that are, sadly, a lot of the victims in what just happened. So, let's say you don't have insurance, you don't have it through your employer. Now, despite Affordable Care Act, you're basically out of luck. So now you're at, you know, our Sunrise or UMC Hospital where they're working around the clock, Valley Hospital, you know, Desert Springs, the Dignity System. They're working really hard to help you, but at some point, you're going to get a bill. And that bill is going to be absolutely devastating if we know anything about hospital bills. So,
oh God, it's got to be like 200K, right?
Oh, I mean, minimum. Every single bolt and screw and nut is going to be accounted for because that's how hospitals bill. They use something called the charge master, which is the master set of charges, like a tube of Vaseline is $37. I know this because when I bonked my head hiking out here on Red Rock, I got a bill from Summerlin Emergency Department that was like $4,000 for three stitches and a tetanus shot.
Yeah.
And every little thing. And in fact, I will say this, they were accurate. They forgot to give me, I forget what it was, the dressing over the wound or something. And they charged me for it. And then they took it off because they realized they didn't actually give it to me. And that would have been another $50. And it was a piece of gauze with some tape. So
you'd be like, yeah, son, I had ordered the McNuggets, but you had not put them in the bag. So I'm going to need you to take this off my bill. You know what I'm saying?
Dude, speaking of which, can I vent for a second? I know this is a very difficult time in Las Vegas, but we want to try to be real for a second. I ordered 20 chicken wings from my favorite local pizza place. And I showed up and they gave me the bag with all the stuff, including the sandwiches. And, you know, Vegas is coming together in this time of difficulty. You know, all the local businesses are offering freebies and the community is really coming together in a way I never thought Las Vegas would do, because we're notoriously kind of loner culture and a little bit transient and a little disconnected, but they've really come together. But I get home and there were only 10 wings and I wanted 20. And the lack of heartburn that I feel now due to the lack of wings is truly infuriating, Tom Heineberg, although my calcium score was zero. Anyways, back to the lecture at hand.
I can't even imagine your pain.
It's really
guys,
hard. I'm going to start a GoFundMe account.
We're going to be setting up a GoFundMe for these wings. Yeah.
To purchase, because I'm sorry, Tom, because the wings.
We're trying to raise $7.89 to get Z 10 more wings.
Logan, go to the TAD cam because I can't let them see me like this.
It's not on, Z. They're going to watch you cry.
Okay, in that case, we'll just go back to the lecture at hand.
So, you know, this GoFundMe thing is something that I see on a pretty consistent basis, not just around this mass shooting, but I see it all the time. Like, especially like friends of mine I have that are in like the motorcycle communities and stuff.
Oh, yeah,
these are constant there because dudes are always getting killed or massively injured on their motorcycles.
Right.
And of course, the kind of guys that like dropped out to ride motorcycles, they don't have a lot of money.
They look cool.
But you know what, Tom? They're too fast, too furious.
Yep.
That's what separates them from you and me. Jamie Bohacek says they also take 20%. What a ripoff, the GoFundMe people. Is it that high? Is it 20%?
Not sure.
On GoFundMe, it may be. Kickstarter's 10%.
It's less. Yeah.
Right? Correct. Yeah. And then Facebook donation is 5%, we learned. So like our UMC donation, they're gonna take a 5% hit off of that, three of which is for credit card processing, and two of which is for owner operation expense of the charity.
Yeah, so it's much more efficient.
Yeah.
Because they're not really trying to profit off it as much. Oscar Vela says it's 8%. I guess it really depends. Aaron O'Shaughnessy calls motorcycles donor cycles, because that's what they call them in Australia, where Aaron is from. Because Australians are hardcore as fuck. They're just like, get on your donor cycle, mate. You're going to donate your spleen soon. I'm like, they don't actually transplant spleens. In fact, they take them out.
I do know that they asked GoFundMe to remove the fee for the Las Vegas fund, which has almost $10 million.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, you know, everybody thinks their project is really special at GoFundMe, but we need money. So we're going to donate $150,000, which is like 2% of what the fund is getting or whatever, you know. Mm. And we're gonna keep the rest because GoFundMe is dope.
So they're paying themselves.
Well, you know, maybe they need a GoFundMe account for themselves. Like, guys, please donate to GoFundMe, because otherwise, who's going to GoFundMe? William Humphrey says GoFundMe fee is 5% plus credit card fees are 2.9%.
So it seems like just nobody knows.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things.
Nobody cares either, because you end up, you donate to GoFundMe accounts based on your elephant, on your emotional reaction. Mm-hmm. And you either feel for the person or the group that's asking for money, or you don't. And if you don't, you're not going to give money, because it takes clicks. So you have to motivate your elephant to overcome this inertia of like, well, why should I give someone my money? Well, because I feel empathy or I feel compassion. Usually it's empathy. Usually you put yourself in their shoes and go, if I were there, man, that would suck. So out of that pain, I'm going to give some money.
You want to hear how terrible our generation is?
Mm.
Me and Logan, I know you've seen this.
I don't know.
Have seen people who are like, hey, moving from Seattle to Portland. Gonna need like $1,200 for moving expenses. So
fill it up.
Fork it over, America. Just give it up.
You know what's amazing about that shit? It used to be you would have to stand on a fucking corner with a cardboard sign and say, trying to hitchhike to Portland, bro. Spare a couple dimes for a dime bag. But now you can just go on the internet, yep. this weirdly anonymous
You're
way.
Like, I'm trying to pay first and last on my new place. It's pretty sweet, man. It's a loft.
It's a loft. It's concrete walls, polished floors.
I think they call it industrial chic. Yeah, it's pretty dope. So.
Also, Mr. Kitty needs a new collar. Really, you put a picture of your cat on your GoFundMe page? So the question again is, gets to the heart of, as a society, okay, you can have all these conversations about gun violence, which are going on in the news. You can have conversations about politics. When it gets down to healthcare, right? So we've talked in the past, is it a right? Is it a privilege? Is that the right question? Should we be focusing on fixing the model first before we talk about even how you're gonna pay for it and whether it's a right or a privilege? Do you have the right to my services? Or as a society, are we big enough that we ought to be taking care of each other at a minimum level? Yada, yada, yada. None of that matters. If you currently get shot at a concert, you could go bankrupt or worse. And that's assuming you survive and you have these million. And you know, when we had Allison Anderson on the show the other day, the trauma RN, APRN out of UMC, she was talking about taking care of these patients. The press disappears in a couple of weeks. America moves on, but these wounds continue and the care has to continue and the patient continues to suffer. An abdominal wound is a long-term rehab. It's a long-term recovery. There are long-term complications. You know, people who are paralyzed have long, lifelong complications. And so the question then is, as a society, how is it that we have to rely on things like GoFundMe accounts now when shouldn't we be providing some basic level of coverage and making that coverage affordable by actually fixing the system that delivers it? Because that's, I think that's the biggest problem in places like, you know, Canada and Europe. You can fix the payment model and go, we're just going to pay for everyone. But then it's a huge component of your cost if you don't actually fix the frontline care model. Now, they actually spend less on a lot of things and have better outcomes, but I think we could actually do even better because we're freaking America.
Well, I think it's actually like one of these things, it seems like it's from a third world country, like an undeveloped country, because in these third world countries, like I know in places like Mexico and lots of places in South America, they have like saving pools, right? So like they'll save up for big purchases because they don't have access to the banking system. Mm. And that's kind of almost what GoFundMe for healthcare crises feels like here in America. It's the same thing, just done at a higher level.
Well, it's interesting because Keisha Allen says the Amish community crowdfund all large medical bills. It worked great for them. Is that true? I didn't think they could use the internet. Maybe they just, they literally get a crowd.
They're in a real crowd.
Right.
Yeah.
Like the village. Right. Yeah.
Like the
torches. M. Night Shyamalan. So, well, the thing is that this gets to the point, actually, Keisha, not Kesha with a dollar sign, Keisha Allen. Those communities are very tight-knit, and they do support each other. And if you actually look at something like Scandinavia, that whole country is a tight-knit kind of family community, and so their GoFundMe is nationalized insurance, right? At least the way that I see it.
Christopher Chai says, when you think about it, medical insurance is supposed to be the GoFundMe for healthcare needs.
Right. You know? Assuming you have it.
Yeah.
And, you know, assuming you can afford the deductible, so when you choose your plan, you have to think, well, what's the worst thing that could happen to me? I could get shot at an open-air concert, be in the ICU for months, and away from my family.
And that's going to be $5,000 to me out of pocket.
Per day.
Right.
Oh, for insurance. Yeah,
for
yeah,
deductible,
yeah. Yeah, your $5,000 deductible. Can I handle that?
Right.
And can I handle all the not being at work and, you know, living on disability and that kind of thing?
Yeah.
So those are things, the calculation you have to do. But as we know, Americans are money illiterate, especially young people, because they just don't, it's not in their equation.
I think I've said it before on the show, but 70% of Americans don't have $400 saved in case of an emergency. So if your medical bill is going to be $400,000, that's not going to happen for you. And you are going to have to go bankrupt.
You're completely screwed.
Yeah.
And you know, and there's so much waste and fraud and duplication and garbage treatment that we have that we could eliminate and actually lower the cost curve so much that we could cover people who at some catastrophic level, right?
Yeah,
because that's really true. What it is. And when we had our guest Ryan Neuhoffel, Dr. Ryan Neuhoffel on, he was talking about, well, his healthcare plan is basically give people a personal health account where they have, it's their deductible basically.
Right.
And poor people can have that funded by external sources and other people can fund it themselves and you use it or you don't. But then you have catastrophic national insurance around that.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you one thing Ryan is not, is a bleeding heart liberal. So he's actually arguing for a national health insurance plan, but in a very free market way. So he's saying, you know, make it catastrophic, make the deductible high, and bend the cost curve by focusing on primary care, which we don't do.
I have to be honest, like, up until I was, 25, if I hadn't had somebody looking out for me in my corner, which was usually my father, I would not have had health insurance. Because every year the conversation with my father was like this: hey, idiot, you need health insurance. I don't want it. I'm invincible. Nothing's going to happen to me, Dad.
You can take your truth and shove it, Pops. I don't trust anyone over 25.
But if I had been at the concert and I took a bullet like so many people did, I would have been totally screwed.
Yeah, you would have been, yeah. Right? Now, and I had the same thing. My dad, my parents being doctors, would never have let me go without insurance. They would have thought that was unthinkable because they would have seen, they see what happens to people without insurance.
Ah, see, lawyer.
Yeah, lawyer.
That's why I couldn't go without it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he knows. He knows. We were such privileged little youth, Tom Heineberg. What about you, Logan? Were you privileged?
No.
No? But you had military insurance.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. So you were privileged.
No way.
You had the best health care in the country. TRICARE.
I walk right in the ER anytime I had a cold. It's great.
And he still does that, but now he has to pay.
Yeah, I was like, yo, Dad, what does health insurance cost? He was like, it's $85 a month. I was like, bruh.
Really?
That's like a whole night of drinking.
That's
like
cheap, too.
Getting a lot of drinks, buying ladies' drinks, doing all kinds of stuff, man.
$85 a month, the good old days, man.
Yeah.
Good luck with that. The minimum you're going to pay now is like $200 a month.
Yeah.
By the way, can I tell you what I've been doing since the shooting, Z? Mm. Every day.
Trolling.
I have made it a point to troll people posting conspiracy theories. And my goal is to make you feel as bad as humanly possible if you post one of those pieces of shit.
You know, this is a tribe talk, so fuck those people. Like, really? You're gonna post. Yeah, this is what we'll post: something with Alison Anderson talking about saving lives
fake,
in the ICU, and he's like, I don't see any pictures. I don't see any pictures. What the fuck are you trying to tell me that this isn't a hoax? They're just trying to take our guns or whatever the hoax. What, by the way, what is the conspiracy?
So they say there's a another person shooting on the second floor, but somebody had like a strobe light on, and you can clearly see it's a strobe light, and the window's not blown out.
Also, there's
like, look at this, it's blown out here, but no one's running.
There's a really dumb,
like 40 minutes before.
There's a dumbass conspiracy going around about how there were multiple shootings at multiple strip properties, which is something that was reported.
Yeah, they called it in
the confusion, and people were hearing echoes at multiple strip properties.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, 3 days later, and we have the information, and you're still posting that.
Yeah.
It's actually dangerous of you to be posting it, and I don't feel like an asshole at all for treating you like the piece of dirt that you are.
Yeah,
okay? Like, I don't feel bad at all, because ideas are dangerous and they have consequences.
This is a thing. Now, okay, this is fascinating. So yes, these people are absolutely shameless pieces of shit, and they need to all be stopped and put on Mars without oxygen. But the thing is, first of all, what good does it do to spread these conspiracies? Like, what truth are they trying to expose that's going to change anything? Okay, there were multiple shooters. And it doesn't matter. There's still a bunch of dead people, a bunch of people wounded in the emergency department.
Yeah.
And so that doesn't change anything. Well, you know, this or that. Who cares? The other thing is this idea that ideas are a virus.
They are.
They are. And in fact, the term meme, which means idea, was a Richard Dawkins thing, right?
That's correct.
And this idea that there are some ideas that truly are poisonous. And now the problem, the danger with saying that is that then you start being accused of being the thought police or the idea police. But the thing is, some ideas are just stupid and dangerous. You know, like the anti-vaccine meme, that's a dumb idea that's stupid and dangerous.
Exactly.
Right?
I mean, we all think that we're so mentally strong and that we're not being infected by thought viruses every day. But like, why do I think about how black people always talk on speakerphones, Z? Like, why is that racist thought, that vaguely racist thought even in my head? You know?
Is that true?
Oh, yeah. They love to talk on speakerphone.
Really?
I think it's because of the brain cancer. And they're probably going to... 20 years from now, you're going to find out black people don't have brain cancer.
Yeah, because they were right.
That's how I feel. Anyway.
I never knew this, Tom, this particular meme about speakerphone.
But think about how few of your own ideas are actually yours. I mean, if you're brave enough to admit that to yourself.
It's you know? Really true. I mean, and look at the Carrie Bennett. Oh, you mean like when they said that Sandy Hook never happened? Like, to me... Yeah.
That was the worst of the worst.
And that's the worst of the worst, because what you're doing is you're taking your shitty bad idea and you're hurting someone who's suffering with it. So the idea itself hurts people. And you know me, I'm not a big fan of butthurt and allowing butthurt to exist in the universe, meaning that people get, you know, offended over words. But that kind of thing is a different level. That's directly attacking someone with words to try to hurt them.
Melissa says, no, we don't always talk on speakerphones. We're just loud, okay? No, that's racist, Melissa.
But that,
you said it, not me.
See, Melissa... And I'm assuming Melissa is African-American.
Yes, Melissa.
But, like, it's funny because Tom is loud as fuck. but he never talks on speakerphone. He's always like, yeah, motherfuckers, this is the thing. We're going to shoot a video today and shit, fuck yeah. And I'm like, you know, you might as well just put it on speakerphone because you could talk from over here.
Yeah, so true. By the way, thanks to Athena Health for sponsoring the show this month.
What, you really had to mention the sponsor in the middle of a torrent of obscenity?
Is this InfoWars?
Yes, InfoWars. Thanks for sponsoring InfoWars.
Holly says, you know what's annoying? When someone posts a GoFundMe account for themselves and then months later they buy an animal. Really? You just posted you needed money for your health and now you buy an animal? Yeah. Oh my God, unbelievable. Dude. So yeah, there's a lot of this. Mm-hmm. It's just... It's the same reason you don't give money to homeless people, okay? Right. I would never give money to a homeless person, ever. You know why? Because they're going to use it for drugs or alcohol. There are plenty of social services that they can take advantage of in the city.
Anything else you want to talk about today, Tom Hodder?
So let's see. Kill all homeless people. Let's stereotype every race. And also curse. I love it. Proud Irish and loud, says Donna Malone Hudson. I love it. I don't know what kind of accent that was, but it was not
like
an Irish accent.
It's like a piracy.
What's that?
It's a pirate.
It's a pirate? It's a pirate. I love it. Arr. UT Southwestern in Dallas, pretty nice benefits. Lauren Regler. Well, I'm glad someone has nice benefits. Maybe we need to move to UT Southwestern.
And then check it. So let's have this conversation real quick. Mm. Thoughts are a virus, right? Like we both kind of agree on that?
Yeah.
Okay. So how do we have the conversation of mental health in this country, right? Like. Mm. Doesn't that all correlate? And like a while back, I know that I'm putting you on the spot here, but like we were sort of batting around the idea of capture and how that may be what's going on with the mentally ill. Like we all have terrible thoughts running through our brain all the time, like the one I shared about black people on speakerphone. Or like I might.
That's not a terrible thought. That's
I might think about killing funny myself observation. Sometimes. I might be like, you know what would it be like if I just kill myself right now? Mm-hmm. You know? So we have these weird thoughts, but where mental illness comes in, anxiety, depression, suicidal ideation, bipolar, et cetera, is where you're capturing that thought and it's stuck in your head.
Yeah.
And it seems like that is your whole why and your whole reason for being.
Right. So it's a question of attention disorder.
Yes.
So it's interesting because I've been listening to this book, The Mind Illuminated, by this dude who teaches you how to go into a really, really high level meditation. So how do you really do this? And it's really a question of how do you direct your attention? How do you train your unconscious mind, which is what actually determines where your attention is going. So it's your unconscious brain that gets captured by things. So, oh my gosh, that light's too bright. Well, I didn't consciously decide that. My unconscious said, take a look at that light because it deserves your attention.
Right.
It then becomes aware. Now with mental illness, the question is that capture disordered? Is either the unconscious component of it or the conscious processing of the captured piece of attention disordered? And with memes and ideas, if you have a bad idea and you're captured by that, and that becomes an obsession. The next thing you know, you're in the 30-second story of the Mandalay doing stuff.
Do you remember The Exorcist?
Quite well.
The scariest thing in The Exorcist is he says basically like, this is something you do to yourself. He's like, the more you believe it, the more it feeds on itself.
Yeah.
And so that's so exactly. freaky when you're the audience member and you leave the theater and you think, oh my God, if I believe it, it'll be real.
You know, I've been citing a lot of Kurt Vonnegut lately. I don't know why, but I read a lot of him when I was younger. So he has a book called Breakfast of Champions, Z-Pack. If you've ever... You ever want to read a really interesting book that was written quite a while ago, but seems like it was written today, Breakfast of Champions. It's like this big. It's really thin by Kurt Vonnegut. And it is about exactly this idea of capture and memes, ideas being poison.
Yeah.
And the idea was the lead character is an auto salesman at a Midwest auto dealership. And he is exposed to this idea through a book that he reads or something, if I'm recalling correctly, that all humans are just robots. And they're just going through the motions. And he is the only person who is not a robot. And this leads to a breakdown that he has where he starts actually treating people like they are robots.
Yeah.
And he's the only person. And you can imagine where it all leads. And it is this poisonous idea in a brain that's susceptible then leads to this sort of just full breakdown of everything.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah, so the idea that ideas are poison.
Alexander says, all I'm seeing here is three doctors that run a podcast and gain revenue from clickbait.
I wish I was a doctor.
Please be a voice for your convictions and actually do something. So, thank you for calling us doctors, Alexander.
Yeah.
Me and Logan.
Yeah,
that's very kind of you.
They're not doctors. and clickbait does nothing for us except for get us views, which does not generate revenue for us.
Well, Alexander was in the comments earlier saying, why don't you stick up for universal healthcare, bro? And actually, you know, do something to you.
This is for Alexander?
Yeah.
Okay, Alexander, listen to me carefully, you motherfucker.
Get him!
I have advocated for universal coverage for Americans for as long as I have been thinking about health insurance. I think all Americans should be covered by some catastrophic insurance. What I don't advocate is a full-on government-run single-payer system because they will fuck it up. What I'm advocating is fix the care system with us, the caregivers on the front lines, actually transforming how we provide care, make it more efficient, more patient-centered, more compassionate, not just to the patients, but to each other, make it team-based, technology-leveraged, right? Which is why we agreed to have a sponsor this month, Athena Health, because we're talking about how can technology actually help us build 3.0. And then you provide that catastrophic coverage, and I don't care who provides it, whether it's employers or the government, but it ought to be for everybody. But then let people compete to provide the best care and the best outcomes. And that is the motherfucking American way. And that is how we cover everybody because it is a social compact. We are better than what we have now and we deserve better than that. Also, fuck you if I didn't say that already.
You just got schooled so hard, bitch. It was dope.
I'm a doctor.
All I know is Logan just got an upgrade to a doctor. Logan, you took a test today.
God damn it.
Can you tell us about this test?
Tom said some shit to me the other day about maybe having Asperger's.
He's got it.
And so I took an Asperger's test and got a score that was, and then Asperger. I asked my wife if any of these things sound like me and she literally laughed in my face.
You know what's funny? This was a big moment for Logan. Don't even remember saying it to him. Not at all.
I hate you guys so much.
It was just a passing comment from Tom.
It was like, oh yeah, you got Asperger's for sure, dude. That's what's wrong with you.
Which, by the way, I'm terrifically jealous of because I could use a little more, organized thinking in my life. Clara Croce, you can't fix cost without tort reform. I agree. I think there has to be a change in how we deal with the legal issues around medicine, malpractice, et cetera. And that's a whole nother talk where we'll have some guests to talk about that. But, you know, here's the thing. The way that we sort of dealt with tort and malpractice at Turntable is we developed deep relationships with our patients so that if mistakes were made, you could do something like, I don't know, say you're sorry and try to make it right. And more often than not, that when you have a relationship with a patient, that works. Now, when you don't have a relationship, when you're in a 2.0 kind of matrix and everybody's trying to cover their ass and it's a fee-for-service thing, and the assumption on patients' part, because education is poor, is that they need all these tests and they need antibiotics for their cold and they need this CAT scan or this MRI that's exposing them to gadolinium or radiation that they don't need and it could cause more trouble down the line. If that's the background milieu you're working from, then yeah, you're going to end up ordering all this shit, particularly in the emergency department where so many tests are ordered just to determine if somebody is lying to you about whether they're addicted to opioids and trying to get pain medicine, and you're scanning them to see, do they really have this pain or this abdominal issue? And this is the problem. It's a multi-system thing that a tort is a piece of it, but it's deeply interwoven with the rest of it.
Can I ask Logan a question?
Ask Logan a question.
Why would you be worried even if you did have Asperger's?
I don't know.
Because you think there's a stigma attached to it?
Apparently.
So, but you'd still be you. You'd still think like you and just be you.
I'm dope.
But you'd have now a label for what you are.
I don't like that.
Yeah. Like how Z has ADHD. Yeah.
What? Who? Squirrel? I do have ADHD.
And so, in some way, is the labeling part of the problem with mental health?
I think it is.
Z? Yeah. Let me tell you, just real quick before you get into it.
True.
So, my mother is severely mentally ill. I think she's schizoaffective. She had a diagnosis of bipolar 2 a long time ago by a doctor I thought was an ass clown and who didn't know what he was talking about because, you know, she totally hears voices and the whole nine. When I was a kid growing up, just her being mentally ill and having the label of that was incredibly stigmatizing for me, in social functions, in school life, etc. But when somebody's mother had cancer, all of a sudden, we were bringing them casseroles.
Yep.
And I'm over here like, what about my mom? She's fucked up too. You know, like, it never made sense to me. And it felt like as soon as you get a diagnosis like how Logan has Asperger's, suddenly you're on the outs from the community as a whole, you know?
Squirrel! I'm sorry, what did you say? I was being ADHD. Listen, the thing about labels, Tom, and I think you brought it up perfectly, is that it depends on the connotation with the label. So like you said, mental illness has this connotation that was negative, particularly back in the day. Now, some people wear their diagnosis as, I finally figured out what's wrong with me and I'm going to actually wear it with pride and try to get, you know, help for it. Mm-hmm. And the same goes with things like Asperger's, the same goes with things like ADHD. The stigma is different. And cancer actually used to have a horrible stigma. Like if you had cancer, you were an untouchable. They didn't even tell you you had it, and you lived your life in the hospital until you died, and doctors lied to you, particularly if you were a woman. So I think the label thing matters in that there's a meaning and a social attachment to labels. Actually, can I digress on this point for a second? Because I have ADHD, and I just realized this is a good chance to introduce this idea that I want to develop more on future shows, and it's this idea that, you know, they talk about holistic medicine all the time, right? And Western practitioners are like, that shit's stupid. Like, you're just, it's a dog whistle for quackery.
Yeah.
Like when you say holistic, right?
Right.
But it's actually not. What real holism in medicine means is that there are four quadrants to every human being, to everything, actually, everything. And those four quadrants, if you don't look at each quadrant, then you end up missing how to actually treat that person and make them better. And those quadrants are very simple, and I won't fully outline it, but I'll say this. One is the internal quadrant, like what's my conscious experience? What are my beliefs? What are my fears? What's my psychiatric state, right? So the internal experience, which in Western medicine, we discount. We go, no, that's just a product of brain chemistry, and we can tweak the brain chemistry, but we don't really worry about the internal experience that much. But it is absolutely crucial, particularly to mind-body effects, affirmative thinking, biofeedback. Those things work. Mind, you know, meditation, they actually do work. So the question is, we ignore the internal quadrant, internal personal quadrant, we're missing a big piece. But the other quadrant is the internal interpersonal quadrant. So what is my relationship to my friends and my family and my support system and my enemies and everybody? And that's where things like labels matter, because if you're labeled with cancer or bipolar disorder with psychotic features, how people now relate to you and see that illness feeds back to your inner quadrant of how do I see my illness and how am I supported and am I a leper living on Molokai, you know, in Hawaii because I'm ostracized, and that will affect how you heal. And then you have the interpersonal quadrants of, I mean, the external personal quadrants of like your brain chemistry and your cells and your metabolism. That's what medicine's really good at. But then the last outer part is the outer societal and environmental part. We ignore that too. What's going on in the built environment, in your home, in society, the internet? What effects are those having on health? And so holism simply means looking at all four of those quadrants whenever you look at a patient and trying to see the whole picture and understand that each quadrant can't be reduced to the others. They're all unique and have to be looked at.
It's interesting because, you know, we did away with mental hospitals because we, you know, basically Ronald Reagan felt that they were societal evil, and you know, Ken Kesey's book didn't help much, and you know, Nurse Ratched and all that kind of stuff. But the truth is, they were sort of bad places, and they weren't designed well for the mentally ill. They were just sterile white walls with, you know, people strapping you down, and everyone, you're isolated, and it's a terrible environment for healing. And it doesn't touch on any of the quadrants you just mentioned. So instead of throwing out mental hospitals as a whole, we probably should bring them back with a redesign.
Yeah.
Something like, what if you actually thought about the interior design of a building, you know, and you said, maybe we won't make it all white walls, you know?
Simple stuff like that matters. When you look at what IDEO does with Apple in terms of design, and now big healthcare systems like Sutter Health are actually looking at design elements in terms of the patient experience and whether people are going to get better. What's it like when you call the operator? What kind of experience do you have? Because it actually feeds back into your personal experience. So that interpersonal quadrant then feeds back into the personal quadrant,
right,
which then feeds back into the individual cells and metabolism, which is all affected by how you got to work on that shitty road that is the technological environment, the big outside its, if you will.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, and how could they be a part of the society, of course. Like, how could they still be of value? Because every person needs to feel they're of value. You can't just lock away somebody in a padded room and be like, this is your life now.
Well, this is where you, again, if you ignore the lower quadrant of we, what is our cultural engagement, if you take that away from a human, they're no longer a human. So this is what we do with mentally ill. We go, well, it's really not an interpersonal thing, really. You just need to work on your own shit.
Yeah.
We can do it in a chemical way with your brain, with medications and some talk therapy, but that's, you know, less valued because we don't get paid as much for it, and it's harder to do, and it requires caring a lot, and we're so busy, you know?
Yeah.
So okay.
There was this, speaking on mental health, there was this artist in England in, like, I think the 1920s, early on. His name is Lewis Wayne, and he used to draw cats.
Mm.
And he drew these really cute cartoonish cats, and as time went on, as he became schizophrenic, it started to emerge, and then his schizophrenia progressed. These cats became like Hindu deities. Mm. It was, the drawings were like crazy elaborate and intricate. Mm. But he spent his whole life out in the English countryside drawing cats, very content. And all the writing about him from that time is that he actually didn't mind having his disease because it actually made him more artistic. He liked hanging out with cats.
Right.
It's kind of his thing. You know?
It's who he was.
Yeah.
And again, the cultural setting of that disease that he had was that his art was valued and he had a place in the world and a purpose. And I think that's what we deprive people of. Like if we tell Logan you have Asperger's and you have no place in our studio, which would be the opposite of what's true. The fact that he has mild Asperger's means that he's crushing it on these on the technicals here.
Well, everybody in Silicon Valley uses it in the opposite way. They go around, they want to have Asperger's.
Yep.
It's like a superpower to them. And in fact, oh my God, there's this dumbass new show. Have you seen it? Mm. It's called The Good Doctor. And it's about
and the doctor
with autism, and they treat autism like it's his superpower.
And he can, like, see things no one else
can. Oh, wow.
He's like a Sherlock Holmes for autism.
It's like Rain Man 2017. Yeah.
Exactly.
Wapner. Well, you know, so Tabitha Beckman says Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and that's exactly right in terms of self-actualization being the highest part of that hierarchy. And I would argue that many of us in medicine are, we've satisfied our survival stuff mostly, although you do enough 12s in a row. That's on edge, or you're a CNA and you're barely making enough money to feed your family, that's on the edge. But if you've surpassed that, you're looking for actualization and purpose and connection. And I think that's part of the reason we were able to build this tribe is we're all looking for that actualization. So the question is, how do we build it together? How do we bounce ideas off each other? Like, how do we find our purpose in the grand web of things, right?
When do you feel you are at Maslow's hierarchy of needs and you don't need to do a GoFundMe? Like, what number for most people, you think?
You know, I think they say that if you make $70,000 or more and you live in a decent cost of living place, any extra money doesn't make you happier, which means you've probably reached the needs point.
Yeah.
And now it's just fulfillment. It's purpose after
that. It's interesting because Seth Godin has this thing where he says once you've met your basic needs, you know, rice and beans, and you can have what you want and take care of your family and a few of the little extras, money then becomes a story. So the people in our society that are chasing billions are chasing this story of, I'm so great, look at me. You know?
Money is a story.
It's a story.
That's interesting. Yeah. That is
when you have your needs met.
Right. Well, then the question is, do your needs start to expand? So it becomes now a need for a legacy or a need for making an impact in the world or a need for helping people. Like Bill Gates had a shit ton of money, more than any human being should have, and he transitioned around about the time he married Melinda to being this philanthropist and doing all this work in the world, much of which is very, very good. It's still tricky and there's a lot of controversy here and there, but the guy is giving away a lot of money. You know?
Yeah.
So that kind of impact, it does matter. And the very rich people that I know, and I know a few, they are like that. They actually are not obsessed with money. They're obsessed with impact. And creating connections and introducing people to each other and seeing those introductions bear fruit. That kind of sort of tribal leadership stage 4 thinking, which if you ever read that book, which I highly recommend, Tribal Leadership by, it's killing me.
Some guy.
And also a doctor who's the head of the Medical Group Management Association. Haley Fisher Wright wrote that book, and it's really fantastic.
Christopher says, mental health as it is generally taught in medical school is too judgmental. The best teacher I had for psychiatry taught us students that all people have aspects of psychiatric disorders and that the differences that we perceive as normal or abnormal only depends on whether a person's milieu of inflections cause a disruption in their own life or the lives of others. I have a great story about this. So I have a friend who was in medical school and the professor said, you know, if you get schizophrenia, this is one of the worst things that can happen to you, happen to a person, you know. and a kid in the back raised his hand and said, I have schizophrenia.
Yeah. It's no, like, I think that's spot on.
Yeah. And you know, your worst case scenario is my everyday. So, right. And I'm here in the same class with you.
Right. Right. So much of it is perspectival. And you can get into a kind of a madness where you say all perspectives are equal and a very, very, very mentally ill person's perspective is just as valid as yours. But that's really, there are truths and truths, and that is less true than, say, a person who's not thought disordered and isn't having disorganized thinking and isn't hearing voices. But that doesn't mean that that person can't have an incredibly meaningful, valuable life, both internally, interpersonally, as part of society, and as an organism in terms of, you know, function.
Right, totally. What do you think? Should we wrap it up?
I think we should wrap it. This has been a fun conversation. And
Brenda
the
says
really good.
His superpower isn't autism. It's his super intellect and the challenges he faces because of his autism. So maybe we should watch the show.
Okay, we'll watch it.
I'm just being judgy about the marketing. Well, the marketing is terrible.
Yeah.
I haven't watched the show.
That's interesting. I haven't even heard about it, but I should check it out. And guys, so please go back and watch the shows we did with Allison Anderson, a frontline worker at UMC, taking care of the victims of the shooting. The sort of mini telethon we did for UMC Hospital that raised like $41,000 so far and has been so, so, so deeply appreciated. Their leadership messaged me and said, look, we're so busy right now and we're so grateful that your ZPAC stepped up and supported us. It means the world to us. So your voice is heard right here in Las Vegas, ZPAC. Your voice from that show continues to ripple and have effects here, so we deeply appreciate it. Do me a favor, hit follow if you haven't yet on this live, because it means that then you'll get notified when we go live, and hit share, because that means other people will know that you're watching the show and they might wanna watch as well, because we're trying to just grow our impact. Again, if we're talking about Maslow's hierarchy, I wanna have the conversation with you guys where we all try to figure out how do we actualize the highest kind of healthcare system, not just for the system, but for each other that we can have. Other thoughts, Tom Heineber?
I love you guys.
I love you too, ZPAC. And Tad loves you even more, but I can't reach him without breaking my microphone. So he misses you, and we miss you. We love you.
By the way, I'm sorry if Logan offended anybody with his Asperger's. He's just, we can't even take him out of the house.
I hate you so much, Tom Heineber. I really do. Not even joking. Go. Hate you. Yo, ZPAC. This episode is made possible by the generous sponsorship of Athena Health. Athena Health partners with hospital and ambulatory clients to drive results. They offer network-enabled medical record, revenue cycle management, patient engagement, care coordination, and population health services to build Health 3.0. Yo, get back to the work you love doing. Athena Health, free up.